best show here?
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
Good, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Big O! Showtime!
Yeah, I gotta put on my good sweatpants.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, and I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a link at bat. For the stream link, go to like the DLTS.org. And I see channels at linuxlink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 1067 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Joel.
Good evening.
We have Joe.
Yep, I'm here.
We have Dave.
Howdy.
And listen, Booth, we have Merv. Yeah. All right. Before I get to my stuff, we have some stuff from Joe. Fire it off, Joe.
Well, last couple of shows I talked about, listener sent me a Likebook Mars to fix the USB port and talk about it on this show, and that's Joshua. Thank you, Joshua. I did get to work on it. I did it on the Linux Lugcast while we were streaming. I didn't actually show it or anything, but I had the time to work on it during that show, so I did it. I ended up having to pull out my heat gun to pull it off, and I had to get a couple of heat blocks to prevent other things from melting. And I got it off, and I did find the first USB that I put on there actually ended up being just slightly off, like the port, the pins that stick out the back were in slightly the wrong location, so I had to go back to my box and find the correct one and do it again. I almost dropped the hammer and purchased a whole hot air soldering station, but I just pulled out my heat gun and used that instead. I got the new one put on. It's probably not the prettiest soldering job I've ever done, but it is a solid connection again. It hooks up to charge. It still would not be detected by my computer, and I went in and I checked all the pins again, and it's solid. And it, like I said, it hooks up like a champ now. There's no more wiggling the cable to get things to work right, and I can still transfer books onto it using the website that the device provides. Just drag and drop the books in, and it works like a charm. It works great. I'm going to see if my wife wants to use it to read the Anne Rice books I put on there. And whatever else she wants me to put on there, because, I just have to have her go.
And that's an older one from 2018, huh?
Yeah. It is an older one. It's micro, and I know some of the newer ones are USB-C. But, yeah, it still works, I assume, like new. I'll hook it up to my Windows computer when I get the chance.
Android 6, though.
Yeah, I think it's actually 8.1, but it's still, that's still pretty old.
Yeah, pretty unsecure, too.
Yeah. And I was able to get it on the internet, of course, but I did not sign into my Google account on it.
Right.
Probably
a good move.
I was looking around to see if there was a way to get Amazon, the Kindle reader on there. So that way, my wife has previously had a Kindle Unlimited subscription.
It's sideloaded probably.
And that's the only way. And I heard it's really janky on there that it's really janky on there and doesn't work all that well. So it's easier for me to download the books onto my computer, remove the DRM, and convert them to EPUB and transfer them over.
Right.
So,
cool.
Are you using Calibre for that? Or?
Yes. You have to do some interesting things still. You have to go in and get this specific code for your device and put it into Calibre.
So in my ignorance, I looked for the Mars Lock book and figured out pretty quick. It's, you buy it from AliExpress. I mean, it's Chinese, right? So you get one?
There was a Kickstarter.
Okay.
I think this is one of the Kickstarter devices.
Okay, because the ones I saw were looked like e-ink, and the interface looks a lot like the Kindle. Is that the case or not?
That is the case, yes. It is definitely e-ink, and it does... It is reminiscent of a Kindle, but sure looks like full-fledged Android just on an e-ink display with the problems that come along with a device that whose refresh rate is like 3 or something.
It's 4.
But yeah, nice. Thank you again. It was fun to fix it. I really enjoyed getting out the heat gun, taking that off, and putting the new one on. I did have to manually, like, pin by pin solder it in instead of using the heat gun again, because if I'd have flipped it over to heat it up, I would have ended up melting a whole lot of plastic. So,
yeah.
Still fun.
Nice.
Okay.
Before we move on from that, I mean, just got a question about ebook readers in general. Do any of y'all use anything other than a Kindle?
No, I don't.
I use my phone.
Yeah.
That's usually what I use. Yeah, phone or my iPad.
I have Kindle, a Kindle device or two. I just don't really use them as, you know,
same.
Kindles.
Yeah, I just didn't know if there was another ebook reader out there, a dedicated device just for ebooks other than the Kindle that was worth anything.
So,
Dave, I've been using a dedicated device. It's called paper. They print ink on top of it, and you can actually hold the book in your hand and turn the pages.
Yeah,
but they take up space.
See, I have the original touchscreen Kindle, which still works, but it does have a little defect. Like there's one set of pixels that's permanently stuck on. And I just haven't gotten around to getting another one because I just figured there's no use because I'm perfectly fine reading on my phone or my my iPad or even a laptop if need
now,
be.
My wife's major complaint with a lot of the e-readers, even the e-ink ones, is the smooth screen.
Yeah.
Now, some of them, you know, you can get the ones that have the rougher screen, but we've always ended up with the ones with smooth screens.
Yeah, yeah.
But you could get a screen protector.
Yeah, you get like a paper like.
That will mimic the feel.
That's what I like. That's what's kept me from getting a new Kindle Paperwhite. The one I have has the textured screen. The one my daughter has is newer, and it's got the smooth screen.
I never even would have thought about that. Is it just an aesthetic feel when you're trying to turn pages or something on it? Then
it's less, a little bit less, just a little bit less glare.
That would make sense too.
Yeah, that's my main beef with the smooth screen is they say it's anti-glare, but I can look at hers and I can look at mine and I prefer using mine.
Right. Now I'm kind of interested in the Kindle Scribe, which is a little pricier.
Yeah.
No, Dave, it's not that hers has normal print and yours has the oversized print for your old eyes, is it? two letters per page?
No, with my glasses, I can see fine.
Okay.
Yeah, that's another good thing about the Kindle versus an actual book. You can change the print size if you need to.
Yeah.
The Lightbook Mars, because I vaguely remember when this came out. It also has a port, a 3.5mm port on it. And so you can hook headphones up to it. And
that's cool.
I think you can have it read the books to you. I'll have to look more into that. And that is cool.
Yeah.
I don't deny that there are a lot of advantages of reading books in EPUB in electronic format, regardless of it being Mobi or EPUB or whatever. And I've done it for years. I don't know.
Yeah,
for some reason,
Kindle
I'm back to
years.
Reading magazines and books.
Yeah, he had the Kindle for months. Years. He had
That classic appeal. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I read physical books for the longest time. And there is just something about sitting down with it and flipping the page and flipping the page. And
I need to get a book. Actually, I'm in the middle of reading a book. And I got less than a month to read it. I got to finish reading it. It's a short one. But I also need to pick up
Dr. Seuss?
No, it's a book for church. And I want to pick up the Python Pocket Reference.
Dick and James?
No, Python Pocket Reference from O'Reilly, which hasn't had an update since 2014.
Oh, it finally has an update now?
No, it doesn't.
Oh.
That's the thing.
I thought that's why you were picking it up, because it has an update.
No, the reason is we're doing one of our guys is going to lead a Python class on our team, so... And
Python 2?
I'm assuming Python
3,
probably.
Well, from 2014, it's going to be Python 1, Joe.
Oh, my bad.
No, actually, it does all the way through Python, like, 3.4.
With the pocket reference from 2014?
Python 3 was around for a long time before it was actually forced to be taken up.
Yeah, 3.4... but the latest is going to be 3.12 and something is the latest, and 3.13 is due out next month.
Yeah.
You know what? I think the incredible delay between Python 2 and 3 and the adoption of that, on one hand, I can respect it from the fact that
making the code right.
It was less work on the user's end, that's for sure, right? Because then now since the switchovers happened and they've been a little more rapid in picking up newer versions, it can become a big pain in the ass to make sure that whatever it is that you're using, like, if I'm not mistaken, like, I think particularly OS 10 is like this. The version of Python in OS 10 is a little stale, if I'm not mistaken, hasn't it?
I'd have to look. I know I have it on there because we use it.
Because I ran into so many problems with that compatibility issue with trying to get some stuff running, and it was older versions of Python and new. It was such a pain in the butt.
I spent a few months
on the migration from 2 to 3 and just getting all my helper scripts working again.
Yeah.
Right. But
and back to the book and thing, you know what? I actually broke down these past couple of months, and I think I mentioned this before, that I have subscriptions to a couple of magazines and I buy magazines. And my reasoning behind that is what I didn't like about magazines and Linux magazines in particular. I love Linux magazines, right? Don't get me wrong. But then at some point it was like, why am I going to pay $15 and all this information is already available online for free? You know, I don't have to pay for it, and there's tons of it out there. And especially dealing with Linux, there's a lot of stuff open source free. And I kind of adopted that mindset for a lot of things. Like, there's a ton of knowledge out there available for free on the internet, and so much available and so much that I can engage with. And, you know, over a decade goes by now, and here I am, and I'm like, you know what?
Right.
It's the same problem with books, magazines, television, music, videos. The more it's available to me, the less I engage in it. I looked at this and I said, you know, here I am interested in these topics,
Do you think it's...
If I go buy, like, what did I pick up this weekend? I bought Philosophy to Now's Guide to Existentialism, which was a compilation of old and some new articles that they threw together in an omnibus. And I'm like, I want to get that because I know if I pick it up, I'm going to read it. But if I say to myself, I'm interested in this and I'll go look it up on the internet at some point, I'm never going to do it. I'll end up fucking around on my news feed or looking at YouTube videos or something like that, and I just don't do it. But if I actually have it curated to me from a source that I've personally vetted it and think it's good, there I am, voila, I'm good to go. I'm happier now, I find. I engage in it more. Like it's actually something that I have to do. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's the same thing with like video games. I have PlayStation Plus. There are a gazillion free video games that I could be playing. And I don't, because I don't play them. I'll go out and buy a game. Yeah. Because it's something specific that I'm interested in, just because I have it available to me. I all this music I have available to me, I don't listen to it. You know what I mean? And it's kind of a shame.
I get it.
It's hard to do everything all at once, but so that, right. That's why I'm back to reading like mainly books and magazines. Not to say that I really love the e-ink or not e-ink. I really love, I thought that was great for books. Right. I didn't mind reading them on my phone and stuff like that. On the Kindle app, it worked great. But I'm preferring books these days.
You're getting old.
I don't want so much choice. I wanted to curate it. I want my 13 channels of over the air broadcast TV back. So I don't have to try and figure out what's good or bad.
See, like these gaming services where you can I actually pay for the Nintendo thing for the Switch.
I do too. I haven't used it. I played
Glass Core
a few months ago.
Is it
finally
choice overload bias?
I don't know.
I think because usually on those services, there's a sheer amount of garbage. And I'd rather go and find a game that everyone else, or even if everyone else doesn't like it, I want to find a game that appeals to me. And I don't want to just look on the thing and say, oh, I'll play that. That kind of looks interesting. Oh, and play it for 5 minutes and be like, no, that sucked. You know, mobile game. Like, it's like, for example, I got a Pixel 9 Pro XL, which I didn't get to talk about too much last week. But, you know, like I was seeing so many people write about, well, the Tensor G4 isn't as fast as blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I don't care. I don't fucking play games on my phone because mobile games suck. They just suck. It's like, you know, either the game is free until a certain point, you can't get any farther until you spend some money, and you don't ever have a choice to just buy the game outright, you know.
The games you can buy outright anymore, there comes a certain point where if you want to play more, you have to pay more.
Right, or if you want a specific car and you have to pay for the DLC, you know.
Yeah,
it's
and there's
like
a lot of free games out there that are pay to win.
Basically, yeah. You know, this is why I like retro games and why. If I were to buy another game system, I would seriously consider either the Asus ROG Ally or a Steam Deck, just because I want to play emulators on a damn thing. It's like,
well, you gotta
all you fucking Xboxes
hoops
and PlayStations, get off of Joel's lawn. Get off of Joel's entertainment system.
You gotta jump through some hoops to play a lot of the classic games on the Steam Deck.
Yeah, you do. You do.
The older you get, the less you like change.
it's not change. It's that the change is stupid.
Well, the change makes you grumpy. That's why you don't like it.
No, it don't make me grumpy.
Makes me grumpy.
You know, it's like I get to a certain point in the game, and I can't get any further until I give them $5 so I can get some coin or something.
And then
movies.
You get all nostalgic for back in the day when you just bought a game straight out. So it is because you're
yeah.
old.
Well,
now
it,
Joe,
yeah, but...
I think you had asked a question about the services and I think the games that you get on them. And I will say this. PlayStation Plus and I think Xbox service, roughly the same. You have a really good mix. A good mix, by good, I don't necessarily mean they're good games. Like, all there's some stinkers on there, of course. But you have a good mix of, like, some old classic games they bring up from the PS1, PS2,
right.
and PS3 era.
That catalog.
And then you have a lot of, you know, have a good collection of newer stuff and some first-end releases like that. But on the Nintendo side, unless something changed, like, the service that you pay for allows you to do online gaming like all the other ones do, but they also offer you a back catalog of classic quote games
like N64, SNES
yeah.
games.
Right. If
so you're
you
not
pay
getting
the monthly
any
fee.
Like new stuff for free.
Right. If you pay the monthly fee, you can play all the old titles.
Right. There's a growing list every month that they add to of titles that you'll be able to, that you're able to play.
Like, my wife has a Nintendo Switch, but she
oh,
doesn't
yeah, yeah.
want
so you know
the...
That.
Well, she doesn't right. want the online account that you have to pay for every month.
Right.
So she doesn't get her... She doesn't get into the whole classic gaming through them. And I can understand, you know, not wanting to pay them a monthly fee in order to, you know, not be able to keep the games if you ever stop paying them.
Right. In fact... I it's been a while since I've been mucking around on the Wii. I know I think when it first came out, they were selling classic games that you could buy for like a few bucks. I don't know if they do that anymore, and they just say no, go for the service.
Right.
But yeah, it's just like let me buy the freaking game and play it. It's like.
That's why you don't play games on your phone, man. You get yourself the Switch.
True.
Get yourself the PlayStation, the Xbox, the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
You saw PS5 Pro came out yesterday, didn't you? It was announced yesterday.
Yeah, it did.
$700.
Yeah.
I've played some games on my phone. I mean, you can get the redone version
emulators.
Of GTA Vice City. So it looks much cleaner than the original version.
Right.
But you have to have a Netflix account. So you do have to have a monthly subscription for that one in order to get that and play it. The remastered version of three of the original GTA games.
There have been some games that I've played on the phone and I've really enjoyed them. They're mostly puzzle kind of games.
Yeah.
But when it comes to something that you actually should be controlling with a joystick.
Right.
I find it really difficult to play on a phone.
Right.
I have a Samsung device.
If I want to, I will hook that thing up to screen and use DeX and use a Bluetooth controller.
Right.
At which point I'm like, I'll just fucking play it on my PlayStation or my computer.
Right.
That's a lot of...
Yeah, but you're really limited on what has the remastered version of GTA VC.
You can
get it on the Switch, but I don't have a Switch.
Well, the thing is a lot of the games that I enjoy playing suck on an analog stick. Like 2600 games, they are horrible on an analog stick. It doesn't work.
I do have the non-remastered version of GTA Vice City on Steam, and I've had that for a long time, and I've played it a couple of times, but it sucks trying to play that on the Steam Deck.
Right.
Wait, what's analog stick?
Like sticks on your Switch, your thumbsticks, yeah.
Okay. Well, I was drawing a blank on that there for a minute.
Yeah,
I know you talked.
The Atari joysticks are like digital, so it's left, right, up, down, and a fire button. That's it. You know.
Or if you, I think there was diagonal too.
No.
Are you sure you could not do that? If you hit, I thought there were some games that that did diagonal.
You tried. No.
You thought you were doing diagonal.
You thought you were doing diagonal. Yeah, it didn't really work that way. But yeah, I know because I've tearing them apart before. In fact, I was in the process of building one, but I don't need to anymore since I bought one at the.
I know they only had the contacts and the four coordinates, but I thought if you position the joystick at a certain point, it can close two of those contacts at one point, and that's how they were doing diagonal.
No, I think it's how we broke them. Because, you know, those little stupid little plastic rings would always break anyway.
Well, I know. I ran through so many of them.
Yep. Oy. But, you know, like playing games is not a focus of my Pixel 9 Pro XL. But I have been played around with a, because that comes with a Gemini Advanced for free for the first year. I've been playing around with that, and it's actually pretty cool. The voice assistant one, you can literally just like carry a conversation. There are limitations, like not that I do, but unless I'm just screwing around with it. But like, if you ask it, like, why should I vote for so and so, it'll tell you that it can't tell you why. You know, because they don't want to piss off Democrats or Republicans or whatever, you know.
So, did you watch the debate the other day?
No, and I don't even want to talk about it. It's stupid. We all lost.
No, I don't think
anyway.
So.
Oh, no.
No,
Trump
I
lost.
Said we lost. No, I said no, we.
Trump lost.
We as America lost.
Trump was the biggest loser.
Contest. Well, you know. It all depends, and that's why I don't want to get into it.
Wait, maybe I see somewhere online that says the Atari 2600 joystick could do diagonal.
Oh well.
But I can't. I can't click it.
Maybe it
doesn't exist anymore.
Maybe it was the Pro Line stick that came with the 7800.
Dan, the 2600 joystick could do diagonals if the program registered like both up and left at the same time motion.
That's what I meant. I meant. Like I not all games took advantage of it, but I thought the actual joystick itself was capable. They were capable of, if it was hitting both of those contacts, to register that as diagonal and do diagonal. Like you could do that.
Yeah, you could program it to do that, but there were only five contacts on the board, up, down, left, right, and the fire button. That
was but if you hit two of the contacts with the joystick, if that was possible, I thought it was, you can hit them by doing it diagonal.
Yeah, the Wikipedia registered. Article says that's possible, so yeah.
I mean, it's not valid.
There wasn't a lot of games that really took advantage
output.
Of it either.
Well, no, I know that. I get it. Wait a minute.
It still wasn't an analog stick. It was a digital stick, 100%. But unlike like 8-bit computers had analog sticks, you know, like the Wico stick and stuff like that. But and that's the other thing too with emulators. Depending on the game, like for example, if you're playing an arcade game on the Switch, it sucks because the stick just isn't the same. You know, it's not the same as like if you're playing the arcade version of Pac-Man, it's not the same. It doesn't have the responsiveness as the arcade quality stick, and that's kind of what sucks about playing like emulated games on a Switch.
You know what? One of the very first games and one of the most popular games on the Atari 2600, and I would say
Go Combat,
one of the most beloved games on the Atari 2600. You can move diagonally, and that's Adventure.
Yeah, Combat. Oh, Adventure. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, Combat, I think you could do that too.
Yeah, you could.
I thought you could do angles on asteroids.
Yeah,
Yeah, Asteroids. I don't know, man. Well, Asteroids itself, the original arcade version, just was buttons.
Well, I thought Asteroids. Asteroids was
you spun and you had the thruster and that and maybe a hyperspace button depending on which version of Asteroids you were playing.
So you didn't need the angle because you would just spin and then go forward.
I think.
Yeah, you turned. You either rotated right or left, and then typically there was up was thrust.
Yeah.
And then they remapped the down to either, like, depending on the mode you were playing on the 2600, there were various games. You could do flip, teleport, and I think maybe in some of them going down slowed you instead of thrust would speed you up and pressing down would slow you, depending on the mode.
Maybe.
Yeah, so it was flip, teleport,
where
deacceleration,
you could, like,
and shield.
Through the asteroids or something.
I know the shields. Shields on that too if you would put down. So there were, I think there was at least four. I don't know, but I thought if you teleported into an asteroid, you died.
Yeah.
Oh, hey. So we got three things I wanted to bring up. The two of them are pretty short, but the other one is probably going to go into a bit of a discussion there and people's opinions. But the first thing, the torch was finally passed yesterday. My daughters, Paige and Lillian, went off to an Alice Cooper concert without me.
Oh, no.
Can you believe it? Without me. So they had a good time, but that torch is passed. But anyway, it was the second thing is I'm running into a challenging problem at work that I wanted to solve our issue where building Docker containers in the GitHub test workflow to do some of the testing, particular integration testing, it takes a long time. In some cases, up close to 15 to 20 minutes. And I knew that when we switched to a multi-stage build, it might add a little bit of time on it. But I was like, why is this taking so damn long? And so I was looking in there, and what I noticed was there's two areas that seem to balloon the times. And that is, these are Next applications, so they have to build, is what it's called. It's like compile it and get it all together and everything, and it makes it faster and cleaner. So it's compiled or a built application, and that process could take 3 to 8 minutes, but another process is caching. So the caching aspect of it is you can supposedly enable caching if you were doing like an installation of software or packages or dependencies or whatever it is, if you cache that, then anytime that job runs and it has to perform that task, it could pull that information out of cache, right? So long as that cache key would match or whatever. But on the Docker side of things, you can tell that in the Docker part that it caches in Google and GitHub API to do the caching, so it's available in your workflows. So that adds about 3 to 5 minutes onto that whole build process to save that build into cache when you're finally finished. So you have it could pick up at different stages depending on where you are, with changes that you have made. Anyway. So those two together were accounting for the majority of the time that it takes. And so the build process, there's not much I can do about that. But when it comes to the caching process, I thought that there might be something a little better to help speed this up. And so what I learned was that obviously – if I were to resubmit, like when I open the pull request, this is when this whole thing starts and it builds the Docker container. Now, let's say that fails or whatever. It takes 15 minutes and we're through. And when I resubmit that same thing, that PR, again to be tested, if nothing has changed in regards to the files in the Docker image, and the way that that works is kind of like in stages when you're building your Docker container. So we build a couple of separate containers, but they all end up being stage containers for the final production release, so that our base dependency container, when that is created, that just does an npm install. So if your package JSON file hasn't changed, that whole process with the npm install, because none of the files have changed in there, it's just going to carry that forward, and that's going to be available to cache for the next step. So in each step of the way, like after you do your install, if you're doing a build or if you're copying files or whatever, if any of that stuff changes in that step, that's where it has to begin actually using or actually performing the steps instead of using cache, so long as that all matches. And so if I resubmit that and don't change any files, you're talking about taking like a 12 to 15 minute container build process down to like a minute at that point. And it was considerably a minute and a half. So it's considerably different. The thing is, GitHub doesn't allow a cache to be used across branches unless a branch is a child branch. So the way that it works is the cache is available to that commit or whatever, that branch commit or whatever, but it's not available to other branches. But anything, so if it looks in that branch commit in there for that cache, if it exists. If it doesn't, it will look in the cache for the main branch or your default branch that it has. So it can go up. But if your branch is a child of another branch, then it will transgress that flow up the branches. Like it'll be the child branch, the parent branch, and then the default branch is how all this cache can be shared, right? But if I have two different branches, they can't share cache. So the way that our continuous integration environment works is that there's multiple feature branches that people are working on at a given time, and then when they create a PR, it'll kick off those processes where it has to build the container as one of the tests. If nothing has changed between two different branches, they're not going to be able to share that cache because they're in two separate branches, right? So there are protection rules against being able to do that. So it almost doesn't make sense that if our workflow 90% of the time is that we submit this, it runs the test, passes, so then there's no reason for us to cache it because that same thing is not going to be run again. So you end up, if you omit the caching in that, save 3 to 5 minutes maybe. But then on the reverse side of that, anybody who's trying to run, you know, make changes to that pull request and have to correct things and do different things, every time they do that, when you don't have a cache, that whole rebuild process has to start again. So that's the big question there is, is it worth it? Or is there another way to take advantage of this? And obviously that you would say, well, if it can go up to the default branch to look at where it can pull the cache from, why not build as much as you can in the default branch? Which in and of itself becomes a problem because the default branch is like what production is based upon. So how could we take advantage of that to be able to traverse the tree so that multiple branches could use that cache to hopefully slow down the build process of the container. So we're still looking into that. It's kind of a challenge. Nobody seems to have a really good solution to this yet. So at that, as far as that we could find for our specific need, but that is a challenge. Now, the other thing, which is more engaging, that I'm sure the rest of you will have input on, and Dave, I'm going to tell you right off the bat.
Yeah.
I am completely at fault. I admit I made a mistake, and I should have known better. But then again, I'm going to also say I feel like it's one of them, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, you're not going to get fooled again kind of things. You know what I mean?
I might just hear what this is.
I spoke about this last week. I said that we were looking at optimizing our video feeds, and the solution that they were talking about doing was when the feed came in, dropping a file on Google Storage and to store some information that would allow it to then move forward. And the idea was that we only create renditions of videos for videos that people are actually going to use, right? So instead of having a video with three renditions that's never being used, we just have that one video out there that could be used at some point. So we're saving a little bit of space and all other things down the line. Anyway, when this idea came up, I said to myself, we get a shit ton of videos, because I know I had to go through and delete a ton of stuff, but we had a shit ton of videos. Is there a object limitation in a subdirectory on Google Storage? Like, is there a limit to how many things that could be in? And again, I said it's not a traditional, you know, hierarchical directory structure like a file system is. It's more of like a database, NoSQL database, where it's kind of a fields, not actual directory. Anyway, I did a Google search that I looked at Google Cloud Storage subdirectory object limitations. And from that, and I believe I reported that I saw that there was a 500,000 object limitation in a subdirectory on Google Cloud Storage.
Repeat that. There was what?
There was a 500,000 object limitation in Google Cloud Storage. It said Google Cloud Storage has a limit of 500,000 objects in a subdirectory. That's what it said, Google Cloud Storage.
Okay.
And so I remember looking at this and saying it and doing it and then going back, and we had a week-long discussion of how we're going to do this, because we're going to run afoul of that 500,000 at some, you know, probably sooner than we think. We got to do this right to prepare for that, so we mitigate these solutions. And Monday, the guy who I was working with, we had built all his plans, was talking to another guy and said to me, where did you see that there was a 500,000? And so I Googled it up, and I'm like, right there it is. And so I'm like, look on it, and I click on the link. And I'm like, you know, I'm clicking on a bunch of other stuff, and I'm like, I'm not seeing it anywhere except in this one spot that specifically says Google Cloud Storage has this 500,000 character limitations. I'm looking at all these other things. So then I click on that thing, and I go in there, and I'm reading it. It's clearly right there. It says Google Cloud Storage has a 500,000 character limitation. But why can't I find this in any of the other documentation, right? And it says it, and it's on Google's site, and it's on Google's documentation, and it came up in my search. And you know what? It came up in the search, and you know what I did differently than any other time? I bought into the fucking hype, and I said to myself about a week before that, maybe I should be more open to AI. Right? So When I did the exact same search on Monday that I did the Monday before, I got the exact same results up there in the AI. And it was, and I remember looking at these results, and they were all like, it was Google Stories. And I remember clicking on the thing, and I double checked. I did double check. But, and I saw it said Google Cloud Storage in that page on the documentation. So this is a search in Google on Google's products, getting links to Google's documentation that was aggregated in the AI. And the one thing that almost exactly matched the question I was asking was presented to me with all the other things. And then I investigated further and further and realized the documentation is for the Google transfer service or something like that. Google transfer.
Google takeout.
No. It was like a Google. It was a device, right? That saved the cloud storage. And it was in that device reported that it specifically said Google Cloud Storage has a limitation of 500,000 objects in a subdirectory, right? And because I looked at that and the heading on the page said that and the text said that, and that was what was in the AI generated results, and all the other AI generated results and some of the other links I looked at were Google documentation going to the spots. I just happened to click on that one to verify in that list up there and realize, not at a glance, I didn't realize that it was for a different product that was using the same terminology. And that, you know, what that said to me, it was clearly my fault, right? But I know that what I asked it and what it presented to me, the results didn't do me any good. It made my life worse because I made a ton of people's lives worse over a week span on this information. And again, like I said, it was a Google AI response to a Google search about Google's product, giving me information from Google's documentation. But to verify it, I had to click the link, which I know I did a couple of those. And it brought me right to that page, that point in that page where I saw, and it looked like it was a page of Google's cloud storage documentation. At that point, I'm like, what benefit does this give me if I have to scrutinize the results closely? And it takes me more time to do that than it would be to just scroll down to the actual article links like a traditional Google search gives me and actually have to engage with it. Do you see what I'm saying? It makes, like, now, as a person who's been burned by it, I'm like, it doesn't save me any time. In fact, it makes, it costs me more time to engage with the AI's output. So now I'm not trusting AI. I'm back to not trusting anything with AI again. Unless I want to make pictures, like dirty pictures for the you know, how do you guys feel? Like, it just chaps it's, my ass.
My biggest problem with it isn't so much that, like, for example, you ask it to do one thing, and it goes right and does it. You ask them to do it a similar thing, but then it won't do it. You know, so it'll randomly work. And it's like, how are you supposed to trust that? You know, it'll give you a reason, like you say, like, generate an image of blah, 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 all right? And it might go ahead and do it. But then if you say generate an image of yeah, but, it, you know, and the only difference is either the subject of what you want or I don't know. Sometimes it's the same thing. It'll say, well, I can't do that with people, generate images of people yet. Like if you're asking it to generate an image of a person, you know. Or there's a function on my Pixel 9 Pro for reimagining, like say if I get a picture and say, reimagine Joel as an anime. And it doesn't do anything with it, you know. And it's like, well, you know, what's your point? You know, I mean, I know it's still a new thing, and I think that's my biggest thing is, it's okay if it works. You know, like one good example of me using AI was when I was in my statistics class. I would take a picture with my phone, plop it in the Gemini, and say, solve it. And it usually does. And it was pretty correct. The only time it wasn't is if it was relying – there's some things in statistics that rely on a table, like for a normal distribution, all right? Well, if your table in your book is different than what the table Google used, then your answer was wrong, even though statistically it's right, you know? So – you know, some things it's good on, other things it's don't. And it can only use what's in the large language model. So, like, for example, if you ask ChatGPT to generate a basic program, like literally a basic program, like from the 80s, it won't know how to do it because it doesn't know what that basic exists. It's kind of like a lot of younger people now that, you know, the world before yesterday didn't exist. And that's AI in a nutshell.
The bias is what I have to remind myself is. I mean, I don't use it much, but I mean, there's bias built into it. I mean, it's, you know, yeah, it's a large language model, but you know, it's garbage in, garbage out. There's rules it has to follow or whatever that makes the output, you know, not suspect, but you have to think about, you know.
And it's not,
but
that
is it,
I don't
worth
think
it?
Not, not.
Well, it's not that I don't think that AI need. I absolutely do think AI needs rules. It's with just who gets to decide the rule.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it going to make good television? I mean, it's, you know, that's what the writers right. were on strike because they thought that AI was going to take their jobs, and I guess eventually it will. There'll be television written. I mean, you can get books now written by AI, and I don't know that I want to read that. I mean.
Well, well, see, here's the thing, right? And I think the problem here is there's two different things, right? The way I'm looking at it, I'm like, you can have AI-generated music, you can have AI-generated pictures, and all that, and as entertainment, you can do that. And right now, unless you have somebody vetting it, more often than not, you're going to have some really wacky shit in there that makes absolute no sense. You know what I mean? Like you watch that hot dog eating contest, and it's like, that's pretty fucking wild, and it's neat and everything, but that is like entertainment and showcasing what can be done. On the flip side to that is, at what point do you trust it? And like, I feel like I can't, because if trusting it means that I have to actually go and verify everything it says, following the same steps that I would just get that information from the get-go, why am I having, you know, they're not giving me anything new, different. They're just adding one more step, which may or may not be right, being presented as right.
Yeah, if you don't already know the answer, using any of these systems is problematic because it'll very confidently and very succinctly
right.
give you the wrong answer.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I hear what you're saying, Joel, like, who determines what is right or wrong, but yet at the same time, there is a right or wrong way to make a loaf of bread. and, you know, throwing motor oil in it is definitely not the right way. So it's like somebody's got to curate it here, or something has to curate it to a point where it becomes efficient enough that I can trust it without having to then curate it again myself.
It's no better than Google when they had the I'm feeling lucky button.
Right.
The only thing is, you can't then research where the information came from because they usually don't give it to you. Something you guys were mentioning before also was you were worried about the rules it was given. There's two things that are playing upon the accuracy and what you see is the rules that it's given and the initial data set that was fed into it. So if the initial data that was fed into it has a bias, you'll end up with stuff too. And that's part of the reason they right. came up with rules. Because, you know, they said things like, you know, show me a picture of a doctor in Africa, and every single one of them was a white guy. And it's like, you know, I'm pretty sure the doctors in Africa, some of them are going to be black. This is the way things work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's why you do rules to, and that's why some of the pictures end up screwy. People say, oh, it's the rules they put in there. But they're doing the rules to try to compensate for the biases in the model. And that's a tough line to tread. So they're trying to correct problems in one area and creating new problems in another area. And it's just something that's going to be inherent in all of these things because they're not really intelligence. They're statistical models.
Nope.
But you know what? On the same token, again, like what I say is, I am trusting somebody out there to provide me with an answer, and I know that if I'm looking for a question about Google services, if somebody is giving me, if I'm asking a specific question and somebody gives me an answer or doesn't just give me a link to their location for the answer that I can find myself, I have to kind of do that research backwards. You know what I mean? So if Murph, if I'm asking you, is there a limitation? And you say, yes, it's in their documentation here, and I go look at it, then I know you're right, right? If I go right to their documentation, I expect them to be right. So the further away from the documentation that you get, the more that you have to vet it and go backwards. I'm saying, in my case, in a lot of cases that I see AI being used for aggregating questions like that, it's not really saving me a step.
Right. It would be great if it said, hey, here's the answer you want, and here's the page, and here's the location on that page that I determine this answer from. But they generally don't do that. So actually, you have to then go research it on your own, in which case, what is the AI doing for you? Telling you it's possible, but maybe wrong. So what's the point?
Well, actually, it did provide me a link, and that link took me right to that portion of the page. But again, it was Google page, Google documentation, and it specifically worded phrase word for word the exact question I asked it, and I didn't pay enough attention to look into that further and realize all these things were true about something else that was using the same terminology
right.
as the service that I was using. So, to me, when I start getting results like that, that have that kind of, from the very company, it's Google's AI showing me this from Google stuff, it makes me question everything.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying, Mer. I agree with you, everything that you're saying, Mer. They provided me with all the information, and that's why I said I screwed up. But in the process of me screwing up, I'm like, what's the point?
Right. Yep.
But if you don't have those links, like you're saying, again, I have to say, it's so much more work to have to start there and have to drag that out than if you did it yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I question all of this stuff. And the problem is, at some point, that's the only resource they're going to give you, and yep. you're going to be stuck with it.
Yep. Yep. And then there is, you know, like it or not, there are people pushing back against this bullshit.
Yeah, but what
the more and more Microsoft shoves Copilot on people, the more and more people are going to start to look to Linux because Linux doesn't have any of that bullshit.
Oh, wait, what's that distribution we just looked at with the AI built right in?
Well, okay, I say you can choose a distribution that doesn't have that bullshit.
And it wanted $40 for it,
too. The majority of them,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no.
So, I mean, that's the thing. You know, it's like, or Mac OS, and the same thing goes like with Apple Intelligence or whatever the hell they call theirs. You know, some of the stuff that I see in these, I'm like, why do I need that? You know, why do I need something to write email for me? You know, now some of the most useful stuff, we did a pilot project of our good friend ServiceNow of an AI stuff in that ServiceNow is starting to build into it. One of the useful things was they had an AI that would do a summary, would look at all the stuff in the case, and then write a summary of all the stuff in the case, then puts it in the field, like the work note field. You can tailor it at that point. So you can say, well, I don't like that the AI put this in there or whatever. And then when you're done, press the button like you normally would, and it would post that in there. And the nice thing is it looks at the entirety of the case and uses that to generate the summary, which is helpful for people who don't freaking read. You know, because they could just go to, you know, they could just, you know, do the work themselves and roll down the page and say, oh, I see he did this on Thursday, did that on Friday, blah, blah, blah.
But the problem is they say these summaries are considerably worse than when people summarize them themselves.
Well, it depends on what you're talking about, though, of course, as it always does.
Well, I'm talking about the studies they've done on it. They had, you know, AI summarize something, and they had people summarize something, and the AI ones were not good.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, Amazon's using summaries to summarize customer reviews, so, you know, there could be bias in that. Somebody just got caught releasing a movie a couple of weeks ago, and the critical acclaim for the movie was found out to be AI generated. You think about the nefarious uses for this. I mean, we're already getting in lots of cases, you know, media in lockstep, seemingly at times saying the same thing. When AI is,
and politicians
put,
too.
Yeah, when AI is put more in control of the narrative, there's going to be a lot of people just go along with whatever the narrative is. I mean, I'm thinking, what if they use this to, you know, lock down on piracy or there's all kinds of ways this can get people in trouble, I think. But
see, I think the way right now for me, I would say, my wife says this all the time. She thinks that AI is good for outlining something that you want to do, but not necessarily telling you how to do it, to help coordinate your thought process, right? So, like a very basic example, if I would say, how do I make a loaf of sourdough bread? Well, basically, AI is going to tell me, find a recipe. Well, make sure you have the equipment, and you have a stove, and find a recipe, and follow that recipe, bake your bread, then take it out. And then you can cut it and serve it this way. Like, it will give you an outline, but not the specifics on how to do stuff. And maybe suggest where you can maybe go from there. So it's not as like telling you how to do something, but how to maybe organize your thoughts towards your goal.
There's a good example of a good use. Yeah.
Or p- picking through the minutiae of maybe structuring something that you want to do as opposed to telling you how to do it.
One of the things I have found, I haven't tried it with Gemini yet, but I have tried it in ChatGPT. Something really useful was I have, like, say, I have potatoes, I have butter, I have salt, I have pepper, and I have asparagus. What can I make with that? You know, and it can come up with a recipe that either uses all or parts of all that. Like, for example, I would expect one of the recipes it could give you is for how to make a baked potato. Not that I need a recipe for that, but, you know, but that would get, at the very minimum, that would give people the idea or the recipe. And I have done it for, like, give me a recipe for keto cheesecake, and it has generated a recipe, and I have used the recipe, and it did work, and it did taste good.
And a well-tuned Google search 5 years ago would have done the same thing.
Yeah, sure. I wonder
still can.
I wonder who actually made that cheesecake recipe that ChatGPT delivered up to you.
Which is a very important point, too. Yeah.
And all we have to do is burn the planet to get this highly accurate source of information.
Right. Well, not according to now, if you listen to what Apple, a lot of their AI stuff is done on the phone in the Apple processors. I'm like, bullshit.
I'm sure some of it is, and it's still going to make it take more power and run hotter.
Yep.
My use of AI has been very limited. I think I asked ChatGPT to come up with a 13th zodiac sign, and I think I asked it to write a D&D campaign based off of, I can't remember what I gave it, but it gave me a partial one for the D&D. It didn't write the whole campaign or anything. But
wait a second, let me ask you that. Yeah. You know what, Dave? That's a perfect example. If you were to ask ChatGPT to generate a D&D campaign for you, it'd be like, some of the things that you want to put in there, it would provide you with probably a decent outline of things that you should do, how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, and other than the power consumption seems perfectly reasonable because you're creating a fiction.
Yeah.
And if it's lackluster in some way that it's not going to be entertaining for your players, then you can spice it up after that. You're not bound to what it gives you, so you're not going to end up with a bland AI, you know, dungeon. But it's something you can work with.
And it's content you can trust because it's fiction. But if you ask it to summarize, you know, the Magna Carta or the U.S. Constitution, can you trust it completely? I mean, I would hope so, but, you know, there's no guarantee. I mean,
yeah, I would maintain that you can't trust it because it doesn't know anything.
Yeah, and it's how it's marketed or how it's received by the public is another part of the danger. If the vast majority of the users think that it's giving it good information, the information becomes even worse if it's not good because more people are relying on it.
Well, it's funny. I was talking to someone about this, and one of my second cousins is, you know, she wants to get into AI as a research topic. I said, that's fantastic. As much as I downplay AI, it's an excellent research topic. And it has been, you know, since the 60s and 70s, even before then. It's a rich place to study. And it's something that in the future will pan out to be something good. But again, since the 60s or 70s, it's always been something that will pan out in the future. What they're doing with it now is a kind of entertaining parlor trick. As far as I'm concerned, anyway, that's only my opinion. But, you know, as far as a research thing to get into computer science, yeah, that's fantastic. That's something that I'm sure you'd be able to make a career out of.
Murph, I agree with you, Murph, right there. And what you're saying is, and I want to also divorce the fact that my complaint is how they're trying to shoehorn, businesses are trying to shoehorn AI into everything. But the actual development and building an AI is fascinating and incredibly complex and I think an exciting field. So it's like, yeah, I think it's like really like awesome and important and evolutionary to do, is going to propel us into really wild things in the future. But how do you pay for it? And then here you have business coming along and saying, well, this is what we can do and people will buy it. You know what I mean? I feel like it's giving AI a black eye, and we're creating something right now that we're going to have to destroy and replace. And I worry that's going to be bad faith.
Right.
I mean, well, I don't.
You guys are all old like me, at least, you know, some subset of you are. Do you guys remember Eliza from back? Yep. You know, so people, when Eliza came out, people thought Eliza was thinking. But guys like us ran this program on our VIC-20s and Commodore 64s, and you could take the basic code apart, and you're like, hey, this is a string of if-then statements put together. And guess what? It ain't all that different today. The string is just that much bigger.
Yeah.
But it is an interesting problem, though, is I can see what they want to do, but how, if you're going to translate what I find is a Google search into another method of being closer to, if I ask Joel this question and Joel comes back with this information,
there's no need to be that mean to Joel to compare him to AI. That's just mean.
But the thing is, if I trust Joel and I know
that the answers are nearly as accurate.
That Joel's gonna give me an accurate answer, and I trust Joel, then I'm pretty confident at that point. But with just this AI, I have no idea where this information came from.
It's like talking to a stranger.
Right. I have to take that next step. Which is just essentially that AI is telling me this information is from this page that I would have linked you to, you know, if you would have just scrolled down
It's like when you go to this, like a store like Best Buy, and say, give me the best computer. Well, that's subjective. What the best for what? You know, what are you going to do with it?
If you walk into Best Buy and say, give me the best computer. What they're going to do is walk you over to the most expensive computer and say, buy this one.
Yep. Yes.
You know what? I'll give them a little bit of credit. There are some honest salespeople at Best Buy, and someone might have the forethought to say, what do you need it for? And then they can actually direct you to what you need. But, yeah, a lot of the salesmen, like, I'm sure, would.
Right. It's like my favorite. One of my favorite stores that's not, I guess it has some technology in it, but one of my favorite non-techie kind of stores is REI. I love REI. I belong to the co-op, right? And if I go in there and ask someone, like if I'm going to go in there looking for my first backpack for doing overnight backpacks, all right, they're not necessarily, they might look at some of the top brands and stuff, but they're not going to send me out of the store in something that I don't find comfortable. They'll say, let's try this one. What do you think of that? You know, they'll put like a weight in it. That's how they do pack fittings there. And they'll put a weight in it, and then they'll have you walk around the store with the pack on to determine how is that rubbing you on your hips the right way, or is there putting too much pressure on the neck with that, how that pack does the straps. You know, is it adjusted right? Things of that nature. And they're not going to send you out of the pack of the store with a pack that is uncomfortable. Okay.
And it's always better to be rubbed the right way.
Well, of course. but
what you're saying right there is the thing is, though, you did the research.
Well, not always. Because there's
what I'm saying to you is, you did the research to find a place that has a good reputation and you can trust.
This is true. I mean, that's true, right?
You know, you have enough knowledge at that point to cut through some of the bullshit, right? So, you know, to say to one of us to go into Best Buy and say, give me your best computer, and we know, just like Murph said, you're not, you know, if you don't know what you're kind of looking for a little bit,
right.
You know, you probably don't know any better not to trust the person at Best Buy, even though we all know you should. That comes with a bit of knowledge, experience, and curation. If you're trying to replace that with AI, that you have to just go do that knowledge to verify the AI's answer.
Well, the AI is only going to give you one. Well, hopefully one answer, but that's what it should give you. You know,
it's like statistics.
It'll always give you an answer,
right? And whether that's, you know, there's no feedback. You know, when you say, well, not that. Well, a lot of times, like you say, well, that's not what I want, and it'll just say my mistake and give up. You know, whereas if it's a real person, they don't, you know. But I will say this, though. When you're doing that kind of shopping, be it for tech or something like some sort of gear or like, for example, shoes for that matter, you know, the best, you know, like if you go to a store, have them fit you and then you don't buy the shoe, that's kind of rotten for one. You know, because I know people that, heck, I've probably done it myself where I've gone into a store, tried the shoe on and said, oh, let me search on Amazon. Oh, there, it's cheaper there. So I'll get it there. Sometimes I order it in the same while I'm standing in the store, you know, but, you know, the hope is in some of the retail stores like REI, that they hire people that are into the outdoor stuff as much as the people that come shopping there are.
Oh, they'll be replaced with kiosks one day. I mean, if you don't trust it to steer you straight when buying shoes or backpacks or looking for answers on the internet, are you going to trust it when it's in the hands of governments or law enforcement?
Yeah, I never
and
do.
The
but
data
yeah.
pool that their AI is perusing is based on social credit scores. I'm thinking near future dystopian Minority Report RoboCop
right.
stuff.
it's like I've been rewatching the show Eureka, and yeah. in the first episode of the last season, they launched on this ship at the end of the previous season, right? And all of a sudden they're back, but apparently they felt like they were only gone for a few minutes, and they were actually gone for 4 years supposedly. And then when they came back, the director of Global Dynamics, the company in the movie, was an AI, and the security was done by multiple AI robots, you know, and it was more or less like living in Nazi Germany almost, you know. And then you get all the way through the episode and you come to find out that, oh, wait, one of the baddies from one of the earlier seasons captured the crew of this ship, and they have them all hooked up to this machine feeding them memories and things like that. And basically enslaving them, you know. And it's like, well, you know, in both cases there are more moral things there, especially with the AI things. It's like, you know, the AI would want it no problem, so it would work on it. Had a machine that it could change you so that you always followed the whatever they told you to do. You know, and that's the scary thing with AIs and things of that is all the fiction stuff that we've all consumed, like, I don't know, Terminator. You know, it's like, do you want to live in a world where AI takes everything over?
Well, I know I missed a little of that, Joel, but that documentary sounds terrible. It sounds like the future sucks.
Right.
You know what? There's two overlapping topics here tonight. There is... And I think they're intermingled with one another. There is the overabundance, too much too much, and it all gets diluted, and you become paralyzed and don't know what to consume. And who do you trust? And by trust, I mean, like, who has the answer that you're looking for? And it's a real tough nut to crack, because we have a hard time dealing with it. And AI provides a really evolutionary way to curate information. And we can't even curate information ourselves, because the more that we receive, which is supposed to be a good thing, the more people are able to produce, the harder it becomes until you evolve to handle that. Because, like I said, I'm back looking at magazines and reading books and stuff because it's kind of curated, and it's like, if you are here in a book or in a magazine format, somebody took the effort to produce something that has some merit that you're going to actually compensate them for to consume.
That's going to change that. I mean, AI is going
to
they're going to be writing books and magazines too.
But I get that. But see, that's the thing. Just because somebody puts out a book or a magazine doesn't mean that information is correct. I still need to do my research and diligence to verify.
Yep.
But the more that you can find ways to do that, like we hit a limit of how efficiently that we can do this ourselves. How do we transcend to that next thing? That's AI research right there. Like, how do you transcend to that next thing that you can process and consume and move faster?
Right. Yeah, I think the important thing here is AI is a tool, but it's not the answer. You know, use it to do certain things. It's great for templating things out. It's great for certain things, but not so great for other things. But just like the old adage, well, it's on the internet, it must be true. Well, which is not really an adage, but it's something that you should not do. Just because something's on the internet doesn't mean it's true.
I thought the adage was the internet's for porn.
Well, there's that too, but
on the internet, everybody's a dog.
Hey, we got to wrap this up.
Yep.
I think the moral of the story, though, Dan, is in the future, just only trust information you get from used bookstores.
I go down to my local used bookstore and say, give me everything you have on Google Cloud Storage. I'll be like, what?
It's like getting a carbureted car to, you know, EMP proof yourself. Yeah.
Well, that's like my wife. She's helping my son study for his automotive classes, and she didn't know that they didn't put carburetors in cars anymore. I'm like, they ain't done that in 30 years. I'm still amazed that NASCAR still runs carburetors.
All right, we got to wrap this up. It's late. And
Yes, we do.
Holy crap.
Thank you,
everybody. Here we go. I'll play us out.
Good night, gentlemen.
Thank you, Murph.
Good night, Murph.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
When you were making egg foo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
I gotta get my hotel reservation set up for my trip down to my dad's.
When you going?
Christmas.
You gonna set up that early? Was he in a touristy area?
Well, that's the thing. Well, actually, hotels fill up fast.
Yeah, I've already got my reservation set up for Christmas in El Paso.
Yeah.
I've had that done for like 2 months now.
And I'm actually thinking about, normally we've been staying, like, there's an exit away from my dad's house, and there's a bunch of hotels there. But then I thought, well, why don't we stay downtown in downtown Knoxville? Then we can go for a walk and go down to some of the shops and stuff down there when my dad has to work. Because that's the other thing, too, is my dad will have to work some of that time. Not the whole time, because I didn't take off, like, I think last year I took, like, a few days off in the week before Christmas. But I think the technical first day of my vacation is the 21st of December. So, I'm probably going to go down first for a day or two, and then Misty and Luke will join me, and then we're probably going to head home the 27th.
Tell your dad to move to a goddamn college town.
He is at a college
Christmas
town.
Holiday, Knoxville, nobody's there. It's a ghost
Knoxville
town. You can stay there for free.
College town. Knoxville is a college town.
It's a tourist town destination. I mean, like State College, PA is a college town.
Okay,
come winter,
I
it's
you
dead.
That.
There's
yeah.
nobody there. You could have the hotel for free, right?
I figured no big deal. I pick up my stuff at the end of the race and go hop in the car and head to church, sweaty with my hot chocolate fleece.
Well, at the start of the show, I'm going to talk about that Like Book Mars again.
Oh, nice.
And I picked up a folding exercise bike. I mean, it's nothing spectacular, but I picked it up for like $9. So I've been jumping on that in the garage.
Marketplace?
No, that was Goodwill.
Okay.
It doesn't have the screen on it anymore. I guess they cut it off for some reason. But, you know, I just put a frickin' phone mount on it and use my watch.
I kind of want one that can stick under my desk because I have a sit stand.
I've had those before. I think I still have one somewhere that's, like, missing the feet or something.
And either that there's a something called a Quibi, which is a little easier. That's like a stationary bicycle pedal set, fits under your desk.
Yeah, I've had those, like I said, and they're okay. I mean, for a couple of years, I was doing like a minimum of 2 hours a day on one of those.
Right.
Just for the fun, and yeah.
Got my appointment on Friday for the ENT for my surgery.
Let me know how that goes.
Not to get it, just the first consultation, so I'm hoping we'll get scheduled.
Fairly certain that the VA wouldn't do that for me, but I don't really care. So we're working through the process of that potential sinus surgery.
Okay.
To undeviate my septum.
Yeah, you'd have to have that done first anyway, because same thing happened with my coworker just got his implanted today. He's out until Monday or Tuesday. And so we'll find that out. But the weirdest thing with him was his doctor had him go to the hospital and pick up his surgical supplies. I'm like, why did you have to do that?
Like, so the doctor didn't have to?
I guess. But the soap and this little thing you breathe into, you know.
That way all the cost is directly on you?
I guess.
And honestly, it probably saves you some money because you're not worried about the markup when it goes to your doctor.
Yeah. I'm not too worried. In my plan, I have $91 until they cover me full freight in network. So I think I can handle that.
That might be another reason that the doctor wants you to do that is because they can't make a profit on it.
Yeah. I just know I want to go backpacking and camping and not have to worry about a CPAP. And I'm excited. kind of a little bit plateaued on the weight wise, although I kind of broke through it a little bit.
That happens.
My diet hasn't been the greatest. Monday I had started a new Bible study, and it happens to be a guy I'm also friends with that's also in the boot camp group tomorrow. And he just got his pit boss, so his first inaugural cook on it, what he did was brisket and burnt ends. And let me tell you, oh, so good. I had it Monday, then I had it Tuesday for lunch. Today I had a burrito bowl, Chawla, the company makes the hot sauce, Chawla, or Cholula, or how you ever say it. They make frozen foods, and I had a burrito bowl, a salsa verde chicken burrito bowl.
Today I had a chicken masala. It was actually pretty good.
Ooh, I like chicken masala. Some tikka is good.
I got a haircut and a beard trim this morning, and then promptly went through a McDonald's drive-thru on the way home. I got a triple cheeseburger.
Jesus, dude.
I didn't eat breakfast, and my haircut was at 10.
I didn't even know they had triple cheeseburgers.
Yeah, yeah.
They do.
Your weight's pretty low, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm down 20 pounds. I'm 174.
I couldn't imagine being 174. I would hate myself at 174.
I want to be at that.
Myself. Do you know how much muscle I would have to lose to be at 174?
Well, you look like a little bit like the... Was it Dave Bautista? Have you seen the images for him?
No.
Man?
Yeah, I have. And, you know, especially considering his age, that's kind of astonishing that he was able to do that. And it honestly is better for him because it means he's cut way down on the sauce.
Yeah.
And especially, like I said, at his age, it's a lot better for him not to have that muscle on his frame because of the amount of stress that it puts on the heart.
Yep. So, I found a new Liquid Death flavor yesterday.
I saw a picture of one. Was that you that posted it?
Yep, Psycho Cider.
Is it any good?
I love it. It's good stuff, man.
I'm interested.
It's weird. I'm pretty sure it doesn't have it in it, but it almost tastes like there's cinnamon in it. But I think that might just be the carbonation.
I had the Coke Zero Oreo.
Any good?
Was it actually? Oh, we know.
No, it actually is good, and it does have a very Oreo flavor to it.
Interesting. I ain't lying. I've been on the lookout for it.
There is a small amount of aftertaste. Like it kind of sits there on the tongue a bit, but it's not like a bad diet. Aftertaste or anything. Yeah. Yeah, but it does taste like Oreo, and it is worth drinking.
I got two new energy drink flavors. Ghost brought out a Welch's grape flavor. Delicious.
7-Eleven came out with their own line of energy drinks called Fusion. Ooh.
Okay.
And they're lower cost, which is, you know, a good thing, and they're not terrible.
Well, that was one I tried, and then Alani New has their Witch's Brew, which is a caramel apple flavor. And I don't use them. I drink them like one a day. That's all I ever have of those. Now, granted, that doesn't count all the coffee I have. Like this morning, I had two shots.
And I watched the new Roadhouse movie.
Ah, yeah, it's not bad, is it?
It's not bad.
It was. I thought it was better than the original.
Yeah, it wasn't the chaotic mess that the original was.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Now, what's the Conor McGregor? The guy's a buffoon.
Yeah, he is. But that's kind of his, you know, personality. Yeah. That's how he makes his money.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, he had to be saucy as hell.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't got a response out of her, but my wife went like the original Matlock series, and you know they're remaking that?
Yeah, with a female Matlock.
Yep.
Well, didn't they do this?
Kathy Bates.
What was it? The Equalizer. They did the same thing with the Equalizer, and that's what on really? Its third season, fourth season, and it's supposed to be pretty decent.
I tried to get into the True Lies TV series.
Yeah, and, me too.
And I didn't make it past like episode 3. I was like,
yeah, and yeah. I really wanted to be into the Mr. and Mrs. Smith series.
Right.
But I didn't make it all the way through first season.
Yeah, I just couldn't, you know, and the new Night Court also, same thing.
Yeah, I started the new Night Court, but yeah, it just wasn't very gripping.
No, I
think I liked the first Night Court because I was young, right. And B, that was during the time where you didn't watch what you wanted to on TV, you watched the least objectionable thing on TV.
Yeah.
Because you were limited in the number of channels you had and everything, which is probably why I watched as much Night Court as a kid as I did.
Yeah.
It hit differently, though. I mean, at least they didn't remake it, you know?
Yeah.
Considering half the cast was dead.
They did a continuation, and it's the daughter of Judge Harry. And the only person that was still in it was, what's his name?
John Larroquette.
John Larroquette, who is an underrated actor. Yeah, exact same character. And he ended up being he started out, you know, being a lawyer, and then I think in second season he went to being a judge.
Oh, I haven't watched any of that.
Yeah, he like did his paperwork or something and ended up being a judge.
Interesting.
I haven't watched any of that, but that's just from the previews and shit that I saw. But he had stopped being a lawyer for the longest time and had started being a process server and then got approached by Harry's daughter and started being a defense attorney instead of a prosecutor. And, yeah, now he's supposedly a judge.
Yeah.
Is Matlock started yet, Joel?
I think it's next week, if I remember right.
A lot of those remake shows have actually been pretty good. I mean, MacGyver was decent. What's that other one? Quantum Leap, I enjoyed. They did 2 seasons. They're not doing any more.
It's like
Magnum
the
P.I.
Magnum Unfortunately, they only ever did 1 season of The Acolyte, and it's canceled.
And supposedly, The Big Bang Theory, Young Sheldon has it's over, but it has a show.
George and Mandy.
Yeah.
Georgie and Mandy. Yep. That is that coming out this fall?
It's got to be soon.
Okay. So I did enjoy Young Sheldon. I watched it to completion.
Oh, and I've been seeing a lot of clips lately for The Rookie. I'm thinking about getting it.
Like the baseball?
No.
This is Nathan.
Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
As an older guy deciding to be a cop.
Yeah, it's not bad. What I saw.
Evidently, because I saw this clip of this song called Daddy Cop or Cutie Cop or something like that, and it just gets stuck in the head.
So, oh, shoot. Strange New Worlds isn't until next year?
Have any of y'all seen the second season of Rings of Power yet?
I didn't watch the first one.
Me either.
It held zero interest for me.
Yeah.
It's like a big F you to you, Dave.
Well, I've not watched any of the second season. Oh, and I only watched part of the first. My daughter watched it, and she's watching the second. But
does she like it?
Yeah, she does. It's receiving some flack the second season because there's some orcs that are morally conflicted about going to war.
That's not supposed to happen.
It's not really taking anything from the source material.
Yes, it's
I've heard some people complain about that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I wanted to be into Wheel of Time, but they sure as heck didn't seem to take a whole lot from the source material, so
yeah,
it was difficult.
They've made some shortcuts. I'm enjoying Wheel of Time. I'm looking forward to season 3.
A Strange New World season 3 is until next year, but they already did a trailer, and there's apparently the first episode. All of them get converted to Vulcans.
And I did watch the first season of The Boys, and I think part of the second season of The Boys, and then I just really couldn't continue with it.
Yeah, that was me. It was an episode I just could not continue.
Yeah, and then Incredible, I watched all the first season, and then I think season 2 came out, and then I just never bothered.
Incredible or Invincible?
Invincible, there you go.
Yeah. Have any of y'all seen Slow Horses?
No.
I think it's on Apple, and it's Gary Oldman, and it's like MI5 rejects. So think spies that weren't good enough to be in MI5, they got took down a notch. And the writing is really good. The humor is it's not a comedy, but there's humor there. Gary Oldman is doing it's a great show. Really, it really is.
It's time to start our show.
James Earl Jones died.
Yeah, James Earl
Jones
is sad. Wait, is anybody watching Only Murders in the Building?
My wife's watching that.
Season 4 just started. Dave, you should be watching it too.
I watched an episode of it too. Yeah.
It is awesome. All right. Dedicate this show to James Earl Jones. And
Luke, I am your father.
And this Joel's pap smear tomorrow.
Nah. I don't think so, Tim.
What episode is this, Dave?
1067.
You the man. And Joe, you said you wanted to
the only job I got.
Give an update, right? Right at the start.
Yeah, on that light book.
I Googled that. That looks interesting.
All right, so here we go. 1067.